So have you fixed that dead bird problem on your roof deck?
The birds. I came out there one day and the birds were gone.
Someone took away the dead birds that were flying into the glass on your roof deck.
The birds were gone. I really didn't give a lot of thought to how it happened, except I figured if it was Spider-Man, he would have come inside and got something to drink.
Because I saw your neighbor, and your neighbor said that the way to prevent the dead birds from flying into the glass is to buy some furniture for your roof deck.
Yeah.
Have you bought any furniture for your roof deck?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were putting in on the Bomani roof deck furniture. Wow, learn something new every day.
I regret that.
Actually. Hey, speaking of birds, only about 10 Philadelphia Eagles plan to attend the White House to celebrate their Super Bowl win with President Trump. So Trump decided to cancel the whole party. That's part of the story. But the important part is the president's statement, partially written in the third person. Quote, they disagree with their president because he insists they proudly stand for the national anthem, hand on heart, in honor of the great men and women of the military and the people of our country. Trump also tweeted that players shouldn't stay in the locker room during the anthem. FYI, no Eagles knelt during the anthem last season and no one stayed in the locker room. This is the sort of controversy the NFL hoped to avoid when enacting its national anthem policy. There hasn't even been a game since it was imposed and it's already backfired. Congratulations, NFL owners. You played yourselves. Did I get that right?
I think you did. And we know what the motives of the president are, because there was this Wall Street Journal article about the depositions in the collusion case. And we have Jerry Jones testifying that President Trump told him, quote, you can't win this one. This one lifts me. And at the time, you might have read that as a warning. Don't do this anymore. Make a policy. I will stop. But now it's clear that this was a taunt. It doesn't matter what you do. This is something that I'm going to push on you whenever I want to be more popular.
Now, there are two levels of this, right? Now, we have to keep in mind, the reason that I think the president is most angry about this is simply that people are not showing up, regardless of what the reason is, because the Washington Post reported that Tom Brady was not, when it got that he was not going to go to the White House, that they wanted to cancel the party then, just over that. And I don't think that Tom Brady was not going to the White House because he was standing in solidarity with these players, right? Like, that's not what the circumstance was. So that was what the issue was in terms of the canceling. But then once it's done, you got to have a story that comes behind it. You got to have something to say. And this is what Donald Trump chose. Now, when they came up with this anthem policy, they need to have some level of compromise, right? Because they didn't want to look like they were forcing players onto the field. They knew that that wouldn't ride. So they left the locker room option. That wasn't going to do the job of what they were trying to do, which seems to be to appease the president of the United States. They couldn't win on that one, and now they're losing bad again.
We could argue about whether kneeling is, at this point, a good idea for anybody who wants to convert people over to their side. I think we're open to the idea that that's not the best idea in 2018. But the problem with this story is that it doesn't matter what anybody's actually doing. Like, if we go back in time and think about how many players were kneeling before President Trump went on the dais in Alabama and gave the S's of B's speech, there were like 8 guys, and then there was a spike, and then it died down, and then in the playoffs, no one did anything. So it seems very clear to me that the person who is trying to make this an issue is the man who released that statement. Because the players, as you said, the Eagles did not kneel. The Eagles involved in this story never did anything related to protesting the anthem in such an explicit way.
But I also think, though, there's a mistake that we could be making here, which is obscuring one of the more interesting things that happened this, which was Malcolm Jenkins and what he had to say about
this. Absolutely.
And Malcolm Jenkins said, look, I have met with Democrats. I have met with Republicans. I'll meet with anybody. This isn't a sit down, right? I don't have a chance to sit down with the president. That is, in effect, what he had to say, because the argument about people going to the White House very often is, well, you might as well go because you might have a chance to engage the president. And the dude that's out here like, nah, I'm engaging everybody. I'm doing ride alongs. I'm having all these conversations,
right?
That's not how this thing happens to work. That almost changes the dialogue around what the reason is that teams actually attend the White House or what the good is of going to the White House. And that's like a worthwhile discussion to have. Except that's not why we're here. We're not here for the purpose of any worthwhile discussion. It's become a show.
It's become a show, and there are so many reasons to not go to the White House. It is not coincidental that this happens to be the reason that that guy likes to drape himself in, like, an American flag. And it is also worth considering what all this means for the White House visit as a concept going forward, assuming forward still counts as a plausible direction. Athletes have been visiting the White House since the 19th century, but the tradition, as we know it, was really birthed by Ronald Reagan. And Bo and I are both in our 30s. We only know a world where meeting the president is part and parcel of winning a ring. But it is fair to wonder, Bomani, because I think we're watching the ritual of the White House visit die in real time.
I mean, so the Warriors visit got canceled, right? The decision was made that they were not going to make that move. The Super Bowl champions visit has been canceled, and they were having trouble to get people to attend. I mean, we saw this coming in here, that it was reported that at first the Eagles sent a list of about 70 people, right? Mm-hmm. 70 people that were going to show up. Then by the time it was done, it was the owner, a couple of players, and the mascot.
And the mascot.
The mascot. And I would be personally highly offended if I were the White House if you said
that. Don't would be humiliating.
Don't worry, guys. We're going to send the mascot.
Yeah, the guy in the Eagle costume. You want that guy? We got him.
Right. That's not going to be what it is. But this becomes such a thing at every turn where who's winning from this anymore? Right. Is the White House winning from extending these invitations? Are teams winning for even having to grapple with it in the first place? Now, I would admit this is probably a discussion that is almost entirely confined in pro sports in America to football and basketball because the demographic dynamics are different.
Those are key. Yeah.
I don't know if this is going to play the same in baseball where you're going to have these uninvitations that take place. But for these two sports, who is this good for now? Who's winning?
It feels so weird to say this because we're talking about visiting the place where the president lives. But it feels like the White House visit has been politicized by the president. I was reading back through previous visits and going through the timeline of how this all start. And if you go to Ronald Reagan instituting that, the Celtics won the championship. You know who didn't go? Larry Bird. And you remember that quote from Larry Bird? The president knows where to find me.
That's an amazing quote.
We didn't lose our minds when he said that. We haven't lost our minds, although there certainly were many controversies when Tim Thomas didn't go when Obama was in the White House, or when Matt Burke didn't go because he's pro-life. We can brook and tolerate so many objections, but when it comes to this being this radical place for protest, that feels new, and the way this seems to play is that that's not going to stop.
Well, I also think at some point, if these things continue, there's a possibility that what will happen is the guys who say they don't want to go, you probably don't want them to go either. Like, let us not forget the idea of having to sit down with the president to talk about the issues. Craig Hodges did that. Craig Hodges showed up to the White House, I believe in a dashiki, and he handed a list of his suggestions for the black community. Craig Hodges never played another game in the NBA after that happened. Yeah. If somebody said they want to stay home, sometimes you need to let them stay home. Married people make the suggestion all the time. Hey, man, college was the best. I mean, you could be broke and still go out on dates. But it must be even better than I thought to be quarterback at Oklahoma because Kyler Murray was taken 9th overall in the Major League Baseball draft and still wants to play football this season. That first job pays. The second job hurts. And the 5'10" Murray will never play a down in the NFL at quarterback. So what am I missing here, Pablo? Tell me if I'm being too harsh, because Kyler Murray playing football this season is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And the A's going for it, not much smarter.
So as a self-interested sports gas bag slash fan, I do want the return of the guy who plays multiple sports professionally. I want Brian Jordan. I want Deion Sanders. I want Bo Jackson. I would love it if this guy somehow played Major League Baseball and the NFL simultaneously. But I just don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that the financial incentives are set up, let alone the medical incentives are set up, for someone in 2018 to look at those two sports and think, yeah, I should be playing football at all.
How much would it cost to get you to play football? I'm just asking you, like, how much would somebody have to pay you to get you to play football? Because I have yet to derive a dollar amount.
Oh, no,
someone could come up with to get me to play football.
And I ain't doing that.
Yeah. And I get why people play football. There are all kinds of reasons. But, man, the A's are going to give him $4.7 million. Like, that's the slot at that draft pick is $4.7 million. I feel like if somebody's talking to you about $4.7 million and this other thing you're doing doesn't get you anything but hurt, there is no way in the world that I'm going to do that at the potential expense of anything in line with that $4.7 million. Like, normally the way this goes is the baseball money shows up, the football player goes and takes the baseball money. Why? Because that's smart. Or at the very least, it's just not stupid. So, like, I hope he loves playing football. He was a legendary high school football player with crazy numbers. He's from Texas. Being the quarterback, I get it.
His dad was a football player, all that.
Somebody got to put their hand on their shoulder and say, son, sometimes part of being an adult is doing things you don't want to do. Go get this money.
Someone needs to bring him to the salary pages for two players in particular, because look up the salary of Calvin Johnson, his career earnings. Calvin Johnson notably left the game early, many would say. And then look up the salary information for Jeff Samardzija. Jeff Samardzija, being a mediocre baseball player, made more than Calvin Johnson did, even though Calvin Johnson was the second coming of Jerry Rice at one point. It's just not mathematically
sensible. Well, hold up. Forget the money for a second. Calvin Johnson says he wakes up in the morning and he can't bend his ankles.
Right.
That's the part we're talking about here. The more we talk about football, we realize, we think about it as an NFL thing, these long-run injury consequences. But we're finding more and more that playing football at these lower levels is having these long-range consequences. Also, this is just not good for the body. Forget about the good for business part just for a second. It's not good for the body. So look, if that's what he wants to do and it makes him happy, good for you. But man, all kinds of things that make you happy, you gotta stop doing sometimes.
And you have to wonder what happens in terms of the types of athletes who even want to play football. If this kid doesn't want to do that, and we're saying he shouldn't, that's not a great sign for football as an institution. By the way, speaking of institutions, social media is a fundamentally stupid place.
Yep.
But if all these legitimately important figures are changing the course of human events by tweeting, it is hard to ignore the medium as a mode of communication. Although Stephen Adams right now would like us to do just that. Because yesterday, this Instagram post asked, who's more valuable to OKC? And some random dude replied, quote, all of them except Melo, end quote. And Adams liked it, and the internet noticed. And Adams told Thunder PR it was an accident, blaming his fat fingers. Bomani, neither of us have fat fingers, but Adams liking that comment seems like a dumb problem. But it is a real problem, isn't it?
The like. The power the like. Of the like. The magnitude of the like in our society, while also there being the ambiguity of what exactly the like means. Because the like can mean all kinds of different things.
Broad term.
Yeah, basically, I feel like the like is, oh, I see you.
That's a head nod.
That's the broadest definition we can use of it to explain that works for just about every situation. However, you got a hard time selling it was just my fat fingers, because every now and then we all accidentally like something. And immediately it's like, you didn't need to know I was here looking at that. Maybe you unlike it, but you know it the second. It's like the needle comes off the record the second you hit a like on something that
terrifying.
You weren't trying to get the like on.
Especially if you're like many, many months in the past.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And you're wondering how you could possibly spin this, and there is no way to spin that.
Yes, yes.
There's no way to spin that.
There's none. And what gets me about this also, part of where I'm fascinated where these guys wind up liking these comments and liking these posts. Man, they read a lot of comments on a lot of posts.
Yes, he was in there.
Yeah,
he was in the comments.
He's in there. He's reading all of this stuff.
This random Russell Westbrook fan Instagram account.
Who does this? That is a fascinating part of this with social media. It's the blessing and curse if you're in any public position. You have so much more access to the things that people have to say about you. And it can be very difficult to turn that off. It can be very difficult not to look at
totally.
It. But man, this is consuming a lot of content.
And there are examples where clearly athletes have accidentally liked stuff. The famous LeBron James liking perfect booties on Instagram. That was an accident. LeBron, I understand. But the problem with this particular story is that, man, the comment was right.
Oh, yeah, it's right.
The comment was right. Of course Carmelo Anthony's not as useful as the other three guys.
But everybody knows it, and everybody's got the same problem. All you can do in Oklahoma City is sit around and think that Carmelo Anthony, maybe, just maybe, is going to walk away from money.
As if we 28 million.
Right. Yeah, he's going to walk away for $28 million. Like we ain't seen Melo's movies. Melo is going to click on that $28 million like it's the terms of services. Like, it doesn't matter what's in here. All that matters is I need to get to this next place.
Can we see, by the way, my favorite Carmelo Anthony clapback of all time? Can we throw that on this giant screen?
Oh, yes.
Because I didn't ask for your glazed donut face, beep, to root for me anyway, is truly the greatest clapback possible. And Stephen Adams is glad he didn't catch that.
I generally appreciate tweets like that. And while we're on it, I'll put my favorite Carmelo Anthony tweet on the screen right here. You ever seen this one?
I don't know if I have.
I'll tell you, Carmelo Anthony, I was just doing some television one day, and boom, that happened. 2010. Oh! 2010. Let's make a toast to another hater. And what I recall saying that day was he was not a top five player, but he was a top 10 player. You know how happy Melo would be in 2018 if somebody was like, I don't know about top five, but I'm cool with top 10.
You should have been happy with top 10 in 2010.
Right. Meanwhile,
that was maybe generous of you.
Meanwhile, he has a team now that is just looking at him like, you don't really like living. I mean, you love New York, right?
Oklahoma
City is nothing like New York. Isn't that what you really want? After two games in a playoff series, we reach a point where the players just want to complain about each other. I can understand that. After today, Sean, I'm going to be ready to complain about Pablo.
That's fair.
Anyway, ESPN reports multiple Warriors are sick of the Cavs doing things they think may injure their players, like Kendrick Perkins not moving his feet back while Steph Curry walked in front of the bench, or Golden State folk hero J.R. Smith undercutting Klay Thompson. The Curry point's a little weird, though. The humble superstar seemed to talk trash to Perk rather than express a concern about his safety. For what it's worth, no one seemed as mad at J.R. delivering a low bridge, including Klay Thompson. So I'll go ahead and say it. The Warriors should be a little less protective of Steph. Like, Pablo, do you not feel like there's like a little brother component here in the way they're talking about this?
On the merits, Steph Curry and people I've talked to in the league who love and care for Steph have noted this. He wasn't moving all that fast, right? The idea of this being a true collision is overrated, but they also recognize how unbelievably scared everyone is whenever Steph's legs get involved with anything. There feels like a working the refs element here. So if this happens in any form again, yeah, they'll call something on Steph's behalf. So I get the gamesmanship aspect of it, I guess.
But I look at Perk, like, I don't feel, it's not like Perk's out there with his feet kicked out, just laying back, just looking to catch Steph Curry when he walks past. Like, that's not what I felt like was going on. My thing is, Curry gave him an up-down. Like,
he
after
did.
This happened, Curry gave him an up-down in a way you could only do in a modern NBA where nobody fights, right? So he gives him the up-down, and he's like, oh, you playing tonight?
Ooh.
I mean, so, like, this dude apparently isn't as worried about this as everybody else. Okay, Perky is out a little bit more than I give him credit for. But look at that, man. Does Steph look like he needs somebody to do something?
Are you playing tonight?
Yeah. Does he look like he needs somebody to do something for him right now? He's got this thing under control. Like, he's not America's little brother, man.
Yes.
He can do this for himself. Or, if you're going to look out for him, you look out for him by hard fouling the other team. The problem is, Perk is wearing his uniform right there. You see Perk right there in that corner?
Oh, yep, there he is.
That is his uniform.
Oh, next to Jose Calderon.
Yes, with that tie on.
Yeah.
Shout out to my man Adam D over there.
Consider yourself counted.
That's right.
Adam Duritz.
That was
wink.
That was a little much. Yeah, that was that. You took it to a place that I was.
But here's the thing about Steph. When guys do get underneath him, when he is anywhere on the court, everybody holds their breath. I mean, the Warriors, keep in mind, like, they have legislated or pushed legislation on behalf of Steph Curry before, this whole rule about getting underneath guys' feet, their legs, their ankles. The infantilization of Steph Curry is too much, but I also get why they do it, because he is kind of as fragile as a small child when it comes to those parts of his body.
I want to talk to you about that counted thing that you workshopped before.
I was really so proud.
Hey, kids. High Noon 9 a.m. Pacific is brought to you by E-Trade, the original place to invest online. And Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. That's it. That's the list. Yo, welcome back to High Noon, 9 a.m. Pacific, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. Must be nice.
You think Cody did that for free?
Absolutely not.
No chance.
Bobani, many people like to say wild things, and they think they can get away with it. But not while we're on the job. Please give us a quote.
I'm like the Cavs. I'm going to get swept. Said former Cav Isaiah Thomas while facing older Isaiah Thomas on a game show segment on the Jimmy Kimmel Show last night. Let's watch.
What is the name of this alien? Do you know the name of that alien?
God. I've watched that numerous times, too.
Oh, wow.
I'm like the Cavs. I'm going to get swept.
Wow. By the way, he took that from where I was going to his joke because his recall was a little slow. Now, does young Isaiah have the grounds to talk trash about the Cavs?
First off, Marvin the Martian. Isn't that hard? Marvin the Martian.
We're impressed.
Okay.
Great job.
But Isaiah Thomas, I went to University of Washington when he was there as senior. I profiled him for Sports Illustrated. I feel like people may be overlooking how spicy he has always been. This is Isaiah Thomas. This is not new. This is who he was when he was wiling out on Twitter. And does he have room to say it? Not really, no, because, you know, he's not particularly relevant right now, but I love that he is saying it.
Well, hold on. How doesn't he have the room to say it? Because, yes, they traded him, and that was the best move for all parties involved. And it looked like they were better after trading him for, like, a couple of games, right? Like,
what was that time?
Yeah, it's not like trading Isaiah Thomas solved the problem. And if he thinks they're going to get swept, he thinks they're going to get swept. And, I mean, he doesn't have that much beef. He put up a throwback Thursday the other day of him with the Cavs. And apparently he's got one of them suits.
Ooh. I also feel like he's just gone through a lot. So he can have this victory lap of trash talking, and we should be tolerant of it. All right, next quote. He's going to shock the league. Said an anonymous NBA coach about Villanova's Dante DiVincenzo, your boy.
Oh, really?
Saying he was the best player at the NBA Combine, and it wasn't even close. So, Bomani, do you think there's an actual chance Dante, white Dante, will shock the league?
Here's the thing. He only has to shock the league but so much for us to act like he did, in fact, shock the league. Right. Like, in terms of actual application. Will he shock the league? That seems like a stretch. Might we treat it as though the league has been shocked? That is entirely possible if he comes through. And I want this so badly. You know me in the NBA. There's two things I love. One, people who learn about American society after leaving Europe via the NBA.
Yes.
And two, the particular archetype of white American basketball player that Dante DiVincenzo is. Because you heard that interview with him, like, after they won the championship, and we were like, oh, Dante's been in the gym a lot. In fact, we got some talented Dante. Ooh.
Yeah, my confidence level is, I always think I can be a first-round pick. I think I can be a professional basketball player. But never speak on that. I don't speak on that on boost myself walking around on social media or anything like that. And but after that game, I think just the outside perspective of me and the outside world getting the attention kind of blew that up and made it a realization for me.
Hey, man, I'm just saying, we haven't had one of these at the forefront of the NBA in a very long time. Like, if he becomes an all-star, the entertainment factor of the NBA goes sky high. There's a whole generation that doesn't realize we used to have a cat like this every couple of years. It ain't been like that for a while.
I was going to say, what do you mean by one of these?
No, you watching exactly what's going on here. The same way that people love it, that Porzingis was watching World Star.
And had
braids and stuff like that, right? People enjoy that sort of thing. Dante, I'm just telling you, man, we have not had one in a while.
I would say that the league has already been shocked because, at the very least, did anybody think he was going to be this good? Because let alone all of the fun stuff.
Had you ever heard of him before the national championship game? I've seen that dude play one game ever.
No, I have
not. That's the only time I've ever seen him play. And I immediately was like, well, he's going to the NBA next year. When people acted like there was some possibility, what, because he was a bench player? How was his stock ever going to be higher than it was that day?
He was the greatest player on the planet that day, and it seems like he has not stopped being someone who could plausibly be one really, really great player.
So what has happened here? Like, if we get here and he turns out to be a good NBA player, like he hits the league as a rookie and he's balling, what did we get wrong here? How did this happen?
I think we know what we got wrong, and I'm just glad we're realizing that we should roll around in that stuff because it's fun.
But he couldn't, I mean, Jay Wright, he couldn't off the bench.
Right? Yeah, he was the sixth man. Yeah.
I'm here for it. Next quote. That will certainly give them a leg up. Said former Cavs GM David Griffin when asked about the possibility of LeBron James going to the Sixers this summer. Griffin, full quote was, I do think it's significant that Rich Paul is the representative for Ben Simmons as well. So he's going to know the org very well. That will certainly give them a leg up. Pablo, you'd be shocked if LeBron was wearing a Sixers uniform next season.
This is a conspiracy wrapped in another conspiracy, and I love it. Because on the one hand, yeah, I think it does matter that LeBron James, although we don't like to say this in polite society, is extremely plugged in to the lives of many other players through his agency. And I say his because it's Rich Paul's, who's his good friend, but LeBron really probably knows what's going on. That's the one layer of the conspiracy. The second one is the man on the screen behind us, David Griffin, who I know and like. David Griffin is seen as the guy who should replace Brian Colangelo if you read all of the fever dream message boards that I read from Sixers fans. But David Griffin, the complication there, he was hired in Phoenix as an intern by Jerry Colangelo. So there is a lot of palace intrigue here, but I am absolutely about the idea that LeBron already knows what is up in Philly and may have feelers as to how he can make that his own.
You can't play with LeBron if you can't shoot. Ben Simmons doesn't even try. So I don't understand how this goes any farther. Like, LeBron James and Ben Simmons on the same team. Why do you need both? And I bet you LeBron James has had that observation.
I think the one reason you have both is because he's LeBron, but you raise a valid dynamic point. All right, last quote. If you're going to trade Kyrie, you get excited because there's going to be a lot, a whole lot coming back. Said Celtics play-by-play man Mike Gorman about the prospect of Danny Ainge dealing Kyrie Irving possibly for Anthony Davis. Does this seem like a good idea?
Hold on. Is the play-by-play man allowed to talk about these things?
I don't know, but he is out here.
That seems to be outside of the purview, one would think. Now, the idea of the Celtics trade for Anthony Davis is something that we've heard for a while. Like, that was a very real thing. It just seems impossible that New Orleans cannot trade him after they got a round deep into the playoffs, right? After they won a series. They can't go ahead and do that. That being said, trading Kyrie is an interesting idea because I've never been certain just how much better Kyrie makes the whole team. But they needed Kyrie in that series against the Cavs because Kyrie, if nothing else, is a dude who can get his own shot. And they have one right now that can do it, but he's 20 years old, right? Like, Kyrie is one of the great shot makers in the NBA. So if you were to trade him, it's not so much about how much you get back, but does what you get back include a shot maker of similar caliber? They didn't give up one of those to get him. That's not how NBA trades work.
And NBA trades, one of the big fallacies is that a quarter or four quarters can make a dollar. Kyrie Irving is the dollar. You don't need a million pieces coming back because the Celtics right now are kind of a team with a lot of pieces. So it really, to me, is about Anthony Davis. Because if you can get Anthony Davis, absolutely do this. But if you're going to downgrade on that superstar mathematics, right? Can this guy be one of the three best players on our championship team? I would be hesitant to lose Kyrie.
Yeah, but they're not getting Anthony Davis.
Probably
like, this is not going to happen. Would you do it for Kawhi?
Two very injured, talented young.
There's Crispy. And then there's Crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Oh, I've got the thing starts early now. we're supposed to talk immediately.
We are on television.
I was like, oh, wow, graphics.
Bomani, we need to talk about this Kevin Durant story because Tim Kawakami of The Athletic published a really good oral history of Kevin Durant hosting all of these teams, all of these suitors in the Hamptons in 2016. And here is the key quote that I want to read to you from Durant about how he made his decision to go to Golden State. Quote, I knew that I was pretty damn good, and I knew I worked extremely hard, but I needed that validation from my peers and teams and GMs, people that are really into the game, to really help me feel good about myself and help me feel confident and let me know that what I was doing was working. We clown Kevin Durant a lot around here. You are blinking in a way that lets me know how you're going to approach that quote about wanting that kind of approval, but what do you think of that?
See, I'm actually going to be a little bit kinder about this than you would expect. I try to look at things from all the angles, right? I want to be fair on this. And I'd like to recognize when potentially I myself am being a bit unfair. You have to give someone credit for being as forthright about some of these things as Kevin Durant is,
yes.
Right? Because, I mean, this is exposing a level of vulnerability that not many people would in this game. Most people project bulletproof confidence. That's how they put themselves out there. And Kevin Durant is willing to tell us about the times where his confidence suffers. And that's not easy to do.
Agreed.
But then we get to that part about his confidence suffering in the first place, and it's perplexing. Like, it is very rare that I feel like we're dealing with a basketball player that needs this external validation on these things. Like, guys just tend to believe it in their own way. Like, it's just legitimately surprising that he would say that I needed the GMs and everybody else to tell me that I was good. Bruh, they gave you a max contract and basically made the whole city of Oklahoma City yours. Like, you didn't believe it after that? Like, without being judgmental, I find that to be interesting.
He did win an MVP award. There was this whole thing where he was America's sweetheart because he shouted out his mom and he had schools like named after him in Oklahoma City and all that. This tells me, number one, that playing with Russell Westbrook didn't seem to do much for that man's confidence, because I do believe he is telling the truth. And I do think there is something about an athlete or any competitive person where pride is not enough. You know, like, to nerd out for a second, go back to ancient Greece and go back to the idea of an honor culture. It's just the concept that a high-level competitor wants the respect of his peers, even if he believes and knows that he is Achilles or whoever the heck the competitor is.
How did he get that? How did he think he wasn't getting it?
And that's where it gets complicated.
You did the Westbrook thing. How are we going to put this on Russ? How are we going to say that playing with Russ?
I didn't mean to do that. I mean,
like I said, the dude got an MVP. You say that playing with Russell Westbrook did nothing for his confidence. What does do something for his confidence? Like, is this now doing something for his confidence? The ability to win with the team that was loaded when he got there in the first place? And I don't judge him for doing it, but I don't see how this would be an affirmation of his confidence. We need you to be our next piece on our team that already won 73 games.
Right, right. And look, when we helped build this show, one of the things we wanted was to feel good coming to work, was to work with people that we really liked and even loved. And I think we're getting there, but Kevin Durant, I don't begrudge him wanting that too. The issue is what happens when you say so explicitly that I need the approval of these people. Because it does leave you open, at the very least, to further clowning, even if you are being very heartfelt.
Well, that's the thing, is that I can't think of a superstar we've ever had.
It's rare.
That fits this paradigm. It is rare. And it's not even something that I think that you can say is a function of the times, because even the dudes of this same generation that are a similar age that are as good as him, this isn't the way they come across. Like, remember, LeBron James is only 3 years older than Kevin Durant. Like, they're not totally different spaces in that way. Could you imagine LeBron saying he needed to go out and hear this from somebody else to tell him that he was good enough?
And it does give us a window into why those burners, which we went a whole couple of minutes without even bringing up, which is progress on our parts. But why did Kevin Durant have those burners? Because he wanted to, I don't know, maybe just feel better about himself.
Right. And we are here to watch it. Like, this is the era for our stars to be exposed in such a way that we can psychoanalyze them. And by the way, they seem to kind of ask us to do it.
Exactly. Maybe feel good. The vast majority of the Eagles fans have decided to abandon their fans, it turns out.
That is the quote from the president.
I just read that.
Hey, eight. That's how many times Aaron Judge struck out yesterday. The most strikeouts in a doubleheader since strikeouts were first recorded in 1910. Ooh. Judge is now second in strikeouts. Manager Aaron Boone said he had no problem with it, but should Boone be more bothered by it?
That's humiliating for a man like that to be so big and so strong and to create so many gusts of wind.
This is the game y'all asked for.
All right. First number, 456. That is how many feet Giancarlo Stanton's revenge homer went last night. Tigers pitcher Mike Fiers had drilled him in his previous at-bat, and we saw that made Stanton mad. Let's watch a video.
Let's see here.
3-1 count on Stanton. Pitch.
Yeah.
Hit Stanton, and Stanton gives...
Oh, it's Jackie Robinson Day. I was like, wow, everybody got 42. Oh, you can't fight on Jackie Robinson Day, fellas.
No,
come on, now
no.
Keep the peace. I can't think of anything worse than a pitch clear brawl in all.
On Jackie Robinson Day?
In all 42.
But we have context, Bo, because back in 2014, the same pitcher hit Stan with this pitch that ended his season, causing facial fractures and dental damage, and that is as brutal a clip as...
How do you go do it again? Like, yeah, I'll do this again.
And now in the sixth inning, Stanton did this to this man.
Wow. He hits the ball so hard.
That is... Yeah, that's one way to exact revenge on somebody, and yeah... The stare.
The toss. That was not a bat flip. The bat was jettisoned, right? Removed from the scene. I can't imagine how good that felt. I can't.
Well, we can imagine how this pitcher felt because he called Stanton's behavior childish. So what would you call that?
Baller. Baller. That's what I would call that. Baller. I mean, look, man, after something like that happens, but also, to be fair to the pitcher, the misery of standing out there all alone while this dude just circles. After, I mean, I understand why pitchers are furious. Like, that's one thing about it. I think the baseball players act kind of silly about those things, right? But I get why he's mad. It's got to feel awful. That sound.
I when I was playing soccer when I was really young, I had braces. And a kid kicked the soccer ball into my mouth. And the braces got all caught up in my lips, and it was just brutal. Which is all to say that I can only imagine how Giancarlo Stanton might have felt after he got that baseball to the dome. And I completely endorse all manner of stunting, because that is the worst type, or the most inconvenient type of injury.
Did you ever stunt on that dude, or did you have to wait till the braces are out before you could consider such a thing?
No, I mostly wasn't able to eat. That was my main response.
Got it.
Stop eating.
All right, next number. 3.04. That's how many seconds it took Mo Bamba on the three-quarter court sprint test at the NBA Combine. Faster than Russell Westbrook, John Wall, Kemba Walker, and a young Dwayne Wade. I love that we have to point out a young Dwayne Wade.
Not current Dwayne Wade.
Because they're kids who are like, Dwayne Wade, what do you mean? Yo, that's kind of frightening.
That is terrible. I mean, Mo Bamba, I don't know if I've ever seen a prospect dominate all of these.
With a 7'9 wingspan, just to be clear.
We're talking longest wingspan ever. And he can do that, and he apparently... How is he faster than John Wall?
I don't... With... I...
Like, how did... Like, this is on everybody, right? Like, we should have known this. We should not be shocked by this. And he can do all of this and be that fast?
Yeah, I feel like we wound up with a conundrum here about trying to make compelling television when you say something that is legitimately, like, makes you speechless.
Yeah, I don't... This does not add up.
Right, Russell Westbrook is quite possibly the most athletic point guard that's ever played in the NBA. Like, I think there's hard to make an argument against it at this point.
I would not
disagree. The idea that a dude 6'9 can get up to speed fast enough to be faster than him running three-quarter court. Because it's not like, you know, you get at his theme, you cross the line, and then they start counting the time. You're starting from the line.
And there is the Giannis dynamic, I would imagine, that enters into it, where he can just cover a lot of ground, and that helps. But
no,
even still.
But it's still almost like Usain Bolt. Like, the incredible part about Usain Bolt is that a man that height can get his legs to turn over
right,
at that
turning,
rate.
Right.
But that's over a span of 100 meters that we're talking about there. We're talking here, three quarters of the court?
So I am somebody who likes to have a holistic view of players, but where do you draft Mo Bamba if he can do all of this? Like, easy lottery, right? Top half of the lottery?
Oh, top five. He's going top five.
I think he has to. Next number. 3, as in John Wick 3, which will reportedly feature Clippers center Boban Marjanovic in a role as an assassin, according to Collider. Are you surprised Hollywood is going after Boban?
I am not surprised that Hollywood is going after Boban, and I think that if the NBA is worried about keeping Boban, they better watch out. Because let's think about this for a second. I believe in 2018, there's more of a future for a 7'3" man in the movies than there is in the NBA. You don't have to close out on no three-point shooters in the movies
on
at
defense.
That point. No, man, people like Boban, you know, all that stuff. And look, there's all kinds of if he dies, he dies money in the movies, right?
There
like,
is.
All he's got to do is be the giant villain or, like, the dude that played Chewbacca. Isn't he, like, 7 feet tall?
Yeah, basketball player.
Yeah, you put Boban in a costume or something like that, and buyout, he got all the money in the world. Like, I think the NBA might have just lost a good one.
Well, and there is a tradition of the ridiculously, exceptionally tall NBA players being in movies. I remember George Mirison,
yes.
My giant. I remember Manute Bol in The Air Up There. I had an English teacher, actually, who told me the last movie he saw before he stopped watching movies was The Air Up There.
Wow. And by the way, none of this is cool as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in Bruce Lee movie.
Like that. Absolutely, because he was, you know, agile and kicking people.
Yes, he was, and I think he died.
Mm.
One more.
Makes sense.
1. That's how many concussions Liverpool keeper Loris Karius was determined to have after he bungled 2 goals in the Champions League final. How should his teammates feel about these 2 errors now that we learned he suffered a concussion earlier in the game? Now, here's the video of this, and I'm glad we're telling you about the concussion early. Because it's that.
Ew.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that.
That's bad.
No. No, and we would normally be making many jokes.
Oh, you forgot there was that one.
Oh, yeah,
that was The other one was the first one again. That one is all bad. And when he comes out, he's crying. Nobody's really got no sympathy for him and the circumstance and everything else. And all of that adds up to a gentleman having a concussion. And how should his teammates feel about it? Like they lost.
Not that they should not now have additional sympathy for him, but even within that sympathy, they lost.
So this is the other side of the concussion protocol. It's not just that we are trying to intervene where manly men will never admit weakness. Sometimes we should intervene because a guy is concussed and may do stuff like this.
Well, there's also the other part. Soccer is a game where if you leave the field, you cannot come back. And it is also a game that has a serious concussion problem. And that probably leads to some very interesting business decisions in determining whether somebody's going to come out of a match because they have a concussion. The stakes are completely different there. We just don't care as much about soccer in this country, so we don't have this ultimately fascinating discussion about the world's most popular sport.
Yeah, fair point.
I mean, it's right there.
Time Noon, 9 a.m. Pacific is brought to you by Metro PCS. Wireless figured out.
Boy, it was easy to do a show when we had the NBA, but we've made it.
Oh, man.
In closing, I'd like to talk about spending $3.3 million for lunch with Warren Buffett. Pablo, an anti-poverty charity called The Glide, they had an auction for a steak dinner with Warren Buffett. A steak lunch, rather, with Warren Buffett. And seven of your friends and some dude, an anonymous bidder, put $3.3 million on this. And I can't imagine how that dude at once feels like such a baller, but ain't balling at all. Because you got to feel like a baller if you got $3.3 million to spend on such a thing. But how you balling if you got to spend $3.3 million to get an audience with Warren Buffett? Like, I don't feel like the real ballers have to spend money to hang out with the other ballers. And, by the way, lunch is at a chain. And I feel like if I put $3.3 million on it, it needs to be at a better place than a chain, and Warren Buffett needs to be paying.
And it can't be lunch.
It cannot be lunch.
Like, if I'm spending $3.3 million, I want the most valuable real estate on your calendar, sir. I don't want you squeezed in between, like, breakfast and a massage. No, that is not how
and
I want to do.
What game am I going to be able to soak up in the course of this lunch that is going to make it worth through? And with seven of my friends, who, by the way, better not ask questions first. If I spend $3.3 million to get us in here, I'm getting all the wisdom. You can pick up some wisdom on the side if you want to, but you need to be happy that you're getting this free plate.
If I'm spending $3.3 million, I better be being served $3.2 million for lunch. That is the other thing.
I can also tell you, if I'm spending $3.3 million for lunch, it ain't with him.
In closing, I would like to discuss a man in Birmingham, England, who claims he traveled from the year 6491 and is stuck in 2018 because his time machine broke. And to prove the skeptics wrong, he just passed a lie detector test. Bomani, I have a couple of thoughts about this. One of them is, you probably should have picked a different year. Like, don't go to 2018. There are other better options available.
Depending on who you are, yeah.
Depending on who you are. Very good point. But the second thing is, doesn't this basically really worry the lie detector industry?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, man.
What? This is admissible in court, and this dude just said he traveled from 6941, and that's somehow getting through the monitor?
It's very Costanzan.
If you
not
believe,
a lie, if you believe,
believe
it,
it
yes. That's what the lie detector test is always hinged on. That it's how much you actually believe what it is that you're saying. And this dude believes it all the way. I just want to know what's cracking at 6941.
Yeah, like, apparently
that's what I need to know. What's going
so
on?
So this
there.
Dude was saying how apparently, yeah, there are aliens. There are all sorts of weird things happening in space. But yeah, he came back and his time machine is broken and he's trying to get back home and now he's stuck here with us.
Whoa. So where do you get it fixed? And I mean, I imagine in the time machine game, that's something that you have to consider, that whatever you take from 6941, you need to make sure it's something they can fix at whatever time you're in. Because look, his time machine broke down. It's broke forever. We don't have the parts.
Right. And what if he changes one thing and then, you know, he doesn't exist anymore, like Back to the Future?
That's the situation, man. He is here forever. Damn.
Good luck!
Yeah.